Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle, and this is a special edition of We Are Libertarians. I'm sitting in a hotel room. I'm here with Frank Caliendo. Yes, that Frank Caliendo. No, this is not a cheap knockoff Frank Caliendo that I found in the hallway. My first question to you, Frank, is what is it like being the most famous person I've ever met?
That's not true. You haven't met more people more famous than me?
I feel like you're the most famous person I know. You're definitely the most famous person I've ever had in a hotel room.
That can get you in some trouble. Yeah, maybe even the most famous person that will talk to you.
Is that like
you've brushed by a lot of more famous people than me.
That's given me their phone number.
Yeah.
Like, I can text you. I feel like, I don't know if we're friends, but...
Yeah, I would not go that far.
Loose acquaintances.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what is it like to be known someone? I have a weird existence where people don't know me as much if I'm not wearing a wig and a fake nose.
Right.
So if I were to walk somewhere with a fake nose and a gray wig, people would be like, you're Frank Caliendo. And or at least that guy, that John Caliendo, because they get it mixed up with John Madden.
If you're in an airport and want attention, do you just start doing Bush or Madden? And you're like,
oh, hey, what's going on, man? Exit, stage left even. That's what Snagglepuss used to say.
So it is odd for me because I grew up watching you on Mad TV. That's where I
know. How old are you?
I'm 35.
I'm 40. Well, I guess I'm 10 years older. Yeah.
Yeah.
45, 74 I was born in, so 45. Yeah.
Mad TV was a huge, I mean, I watched it probably more than I watched SNL. I really loved Mad TV, and so I remember you from that. And so when I met you at Bob and Tom, I was like,
complete disappointment.
I still haven't recovered. I was like, wow, this is Frank Elliott. He was on the Magic Box.
Yeah.
And so I had an awareness of you. I knew you, and then you had no idea who I was. What is it? This has started to happen. I'll occasionally be out, and somebody will come up and go, "Hey, I love the podcast," and they know you, but you don't know them. Like on the scale that you're at, that has to be somewhat like odd. Like
yeah, it's weird because you don't.
How do
know,
you reconcile?
You
that?
Don't know if somebody knows you. I'm like, I just say, "Do I know you?" And that usually, like, no. And they'll give you the goods on where they know you from,
right?
And sometimes it's even they'll know you from that you think it's entertainment, and they'll know you from high school.
Really?
Or something. Yeah, because you don't know. I remember Jimmy Kimmel telling me a story about somebody at Home Depot kept looking at him, and he's like, yes, I'm Jimmy Kimmel. And the guy's like, no, you have something on your lip. He's like, oh, so you have to, you don't want to do that thing where you think people know who you are just because you've been on TV or
right.
whatever. It's a weird thing. I always guess that they think I'm weird or something, and that's why they're staring first. But if it's over and over, if people look away and keep looking back, you can almost feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll... if they don't say anything, I'm not going to say anything because I don't know. But if they say something, it's always, you know, you're just nice to them. My wife, you've heard me tell this story a little bit, but I'm sitting in the airport with my wife and she's like, why are they staring at me? I'm like, it's me. People
right.
know who I am. They think I'm either the guy from TV or I'm their high school gym teacher, somewhere in between those two bookends. But in terms of when people see me too, they I'm not noticed that much because people expect me, not only the wigs and the nose, people expect me to be way taller and fatter.
Mm.
So when I'm 5'6", and people aren't expecting that. They're expecting to see John Madden or somebody who they think is 6'3",
right.
350 pounds. That's what they're thinking I'm going to be. And it's almost like this level of disappointment when they realize that the magic box you spoke of amplifies and makes you believe things that may or may not be true.
Yeah. So is it? Do you get recognized every day?
I don't go out enough to be recognized every day. You have to leave the compound to. I would say, yeah. I'm not sure. I try. If you don't draw attention to yourself, people aren't going to know. Like I've talked to people like at Disney, and I've done the tour guide stuff with Disney. If you don't. Make it the people.
What is it like to not draw attention to yourself? I have no idea what that's like.
wear sunglasses at the wrong time.
Right.
Have a bunch of people standing around you that look like bodyguards.
Right.
That's people who, you know, if you, I remember them telling me about James Gandolfini being at during The Sopranos being at Disney World. Nobody knew he was there because he just looked like your average big bald guy.
Right.
He wasn't drawing attention to himself. People were like, ah, that guy kind of looks like... Jason Momoa was at an airport, Aquaman. I was at an airport, and people were like, God, that guy looks like Aquaman. He turns around like, I think that might be Aquaman. You know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I have a little story about that, too, which is an interesting one about not being recognized. Like, so Jason Momoa, I read later that his private plane had broken down, or the Invisible Jet. I think he was borrowing it from Wonder Woman.
All right.
So he was in the Phoenix area working on a motorcycle, which seems like the type of thing Jason Momoa would do, is working right. on a motorcycle or some type of early historical vehicle that he, or maybe some fantasy dragon killing vehicle.
Right.
So he's on his plane. He's with his family. He's with his kids. Not his whole family, but his kids. They looked exactly like him. Goatees, tridents. And so they get on the plane and he just keeps looking at me, just looking at me. I'm thinking maybe he recognizes me because I've had that happen before where people way more famous than me recognize me. I'm like, that's pretty cool if Jason Momoa knows me. Using his telepathic powers. Aquaman summons Frank Caliendo. Boom, boom, boom. I'm here. So he keeps looking at me. Nothing, nothing.
You think that if he could summon people magically, he'd summon Frank Caliendo?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Only if he wanted to win the battle.
Okay, right.
So he doesn't... Nothing happens, but he keeps looking at me every once in a while. And then he gets up to go to the bathroom, and I'm thinking, you know what? I'm going to sneak a picture. My sneak a picture is not a good one. I sneak a second one. He sees me, and he reaches like, none of that. I was like, oh, man. I was like, ah, oh, I wasn't going to do anything with it. I just wanted to tell my daughter, you know, but right. people, they worry about they're going to be put on Facebook or something right. like that. I had no interest in that. I just want my daughter to see it because she's a huge superhero fan. Well, that's not the worst part.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The flight attendant sees me doing it. She goes, you are going to get rid of that. So I obviously lied to her. And I was like, absolutely, I will. But in my mind, I'm going... People were taking pictures of him the whole time. Nobody, right. And why am I all of a sudden the bad guy? Why am I Black Manta?
That's kind of like, it's got to be his whole life, just people whipping out their phones as you walk
right,
by.
Right, they all were, but I was the one who got called out. And then the flight attendant telling me that I have to put it away, and I'm thinking, what are you talking, wait, people take pictures of me too all the time, and right. I can't stop them. He would have used his telepathy on you if you had to be, maybe he did and I didn't know it. So, then I was like, I lied to her and said I was going to get rid of it, and I didn't. But then it got worse because as he comes out of the bathroom, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, dude. He's like, and we had a great conversation because he's like, ugh, that was all I got from him. So he went and sat back down. And then me trying to make up for it and be like, I'm so embarrassed at that point because the flight attendant doesn't recognize me. And I'm like, I'm famous and, you know, yeah, not Aquaman, that I could
ESPN and
be
stuff.
One of his fish or something. So, Mad TV. I was there for 5 long years. So then I get on the phone after we landed. And I'm like, yeah, on my way over to the studio. Yeah, Fox. Yeah, just even more embarrassing. So
if you're gonna dig in, go all the way.
Yeah, and I did, and I was no problem. Yeah, will wardrobe be ready for Mr. Caliendo's third person speaker? So that was, you know, one of those kinds of moments where, you know, you're that famous. But even some people were like, look at him. Like, the people go, that's the Aquaman. Be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't, like, people don't even know who people are anymore. Maybe Tom Cruise or somebody that mega famous, but that guy's pretty famous.
Yeah.
Like, some people were like, oh, I don't get it.
Tom Cruise is like open the CVS after hours famous. You know, like
He's closed the CVS during hours.
That's exactly right. He's got Uber money. Like he literally could buy
like
Uber.
Enough money for an Uber or to
like could buy Uber. So I jokingly opened it, but I am curious about the concept of fame because it seems in the Instagram world and social media world, the concept of social proof, which is if you were attached to someone with power or notoriety, then that helps you. I can tell you that going on your podcast, you were gracious enough to invite me on Al and Frank Try to Be Serious a few times. And nobody ever took me seriously in the libertarian world and never got invited on libertarian podcast even. And the second they saw I was on yours, people who had been talking trash about my podcast for years were like, you want to come on mine?
Oh, really? It gave you some credibility?
In my own community, which...
Interesting.
And I think it's because they actually listened to that. They never had listened to my podcast. There's like a jealousy thing. But then when they heard me on your podcast, they're like, oh, he did a good job explaining these things. So it was kind of a weird moment of social proof where, wow, somebody of Frank Caliendo and Al Jackson's status recognized Chris Spangle.
Yeah.
And so therefore, there's a psychology... It changed in their minds even. That was like a moment when I went, it really is amazing how much we are investing in the concept of social proof without thinking about it. And you having been on the magic box, as I've called it, I mean, there's like radio fame, podcasting fame is like the bottom of show business. And then you're like TV famous, which is like,
I'm sports TV famous more than TV famous, even though I've done a bunch of TV. But it's
it is interesting that I see it so much into
social. And I'm
going to
talk while you're talking the rest of the whole podcast. No, but I see it. I see it a lot in Instagram as I'm trying to learn about Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It's I almost feel bad for people because everybody's just trying to look more important, putting filters on to look better, getting the perfect pose. I'm not talking about just recording something that seems perfect. It's like getting the perfect look, the perfect twist,
right?
A female to get the body shape you want in that particular pose. I had a guy, it's so funny because people, the more you start talking about growing your Instagram, the more people come and try to help you grow your Instagram, but it costs you money. This is a great one I got today. I love messing with these people because I know how this all works because I've met industry types of insiders. But this one guy comes to me, he goes, hey, I would love to... I'd like to help you grow your Instagram account. Or hello. They just put hello in there and you respond to it. And then they come with their pitch. I provide shout out to my 30 million follower network.
Right. And it's like all in Beijing.
Yeah. And I've got all these big names that have grown 100,000 people plus in the past year. And I said, he's like, after he says I provide shout outs, I was like, sure, feel free to mention me. Thanks.
Yeah, right.
That's all I get. And he's like, oh, would you like to, in my growth plans, I charge $1,000 for a certain amount of followers gain. I said, no, thanks. Like, I don't need your fake followers in another country that, I mean, I just don't, listen, not that I don't need it, and I get that that's part of the game, but what's that going to do to me? Because they're just going to get wiped out at some point anyways. And it's not helping me gain real fandom, although, you know, they're used to doing this with people that nobody knows. I actually just haven't been on social media because it got so angry and political and it's not my politics that's really in social media, I don't feel. I don't even believe it's most of the people's politics in social media because I look at that, I go, nobody is that, like, nobody loves socialism that much that has never experienced even capitalism yet. Right. And there are big flaws in capitalism. There absolutely are. But it's like, wait, you're already trying to pitch me that we should be not communist, but although some people are like, yeah, communist. Like, do you even know how bad that is? That's totally different than socialism, yeah, right? They don't understand. And I think people even define socialism wrong most of the time from what I understand it to be. Mm-hmm. But nobody has an idea of anything. So I got off of social media for a while, especially Twitter, because it was just so angry and everybody just piles on. And it's just like, hey, I'm going to say something terrible about Donald Trump just to say something terrible. A friend of mine was like, I just have to be out there and say that I don't agree with him. And then I want to be on record. I'm like, but every day, six times?
Everybody feels that they have to be their own PR department now.
Yes, there's a lot of that. And it's people are just trying. It's easy to get likes from a certain segment that do that. And it's, you can get likes the other way, too, and say people have to leave Donald Trump alone. But you're going to get destroyed. You're going to get killed because more people are left-leaning on Twitter and most social media. And I think it's because it's younger people and it's... And I'm socially more left. It's just, I'm just, when it comes to fiscal stuff, I'm like, hey, man, I don't know. I don't mind being taxed. I get it. That's part of the game. But at the same time, don't tell me I'm a bad person because I'm not paying enough taxes, because I'm paying a lot in taxes.
Right.
Just quit telling me I'm a bad person.
Right. So do you think that, and I don't want to, I know we talked a little bit about what you normally talk on podcasts, which is comedy and censorship and stuff like that. But do you know, it seems like after the Chappelle special, he like carved out a new space for people.
I've seen people doing that in, because I haven't seen the full, I've only seen a little bit of the Chappelle special. I need to watch more of it because so many people talk about it.
Right.
I just have trouble watching comedy in general. It's typical for me. So,
I saw after the Emmys, you know, after the Chappelle special, then you see Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert go on the Emmys, and they kind of bash the Emmys and cancel culture. And then you see Sarah Silverman kind of doing the same after she just had her blackface incident. And she's like super woke, but then she's even trying to be canceled by a certain segment of Twitter. You've been in comedy, a stand-up comedian, and working for what, 30? How long?
I started in 96.
Okay, so that, do you think Twitter is kind of the driving force for the move left for a lot of, I mean, entertainment industry's always been left, but comedy always kind of had, especially after Carlin and his lawsuits, more of an open-minded feel to it, and you could say a lot of stuff, and Nick DiPaolo would feel comfortable performing at the Comedy Store right after Sarah Silverman. They'd be friends together. But then over the last like 5 years, it seems like it's kind of gotten tighter, and there's a lot
algorithms.
It's more high stakes.
But don't you think algorithms have something to do with it? It's confirmation culture. Like, you only see the people that agree with you now.
Right.
People don't even know that. Well, who did I talk about this with? I talked to John Lovitz the other day, and he's on a podcast coming up with me. He got into this. He was just being zany and stuff like that.
What podcast?
That's the Caliendo Cast.
Okay.
It's more sports and stuff, but John Holmberg does that with me. And he's got a radio show, and he gets massive guests.
Awesome.
So some of them come over to Alan Frank that I can get to talk about some of that stuff too, but it's not really a serious, it's more sports and goofy, but sometimes people get into this kind of stuff. And Lovitz just came over, and Lovitz loves Holmberg, and now he likes me. But it was this interesting, so where was I going with what he was talking about?
Cancel and confirmation culture and Twitter and its effect on comedy. And,
he was talking about, he saw the same thing I saw, that he was out in the Midwest doing comedy, and he could see that Trump had a chance to win years ago, you know, and I saw the same thing. I'm like, I don't think people, like, even I knew people at Fox News that said, oh, there's no way he wins. I'm like, I'm out there every day. He's got a chance. Mm. I mean, it's not like, I don't know if he's going to win or not. I just live by whatever happens anyways, but it's like, on either side or any side, I was like, there's a lot more people and I don't think they're racist or anything like that. It's like they're all people who feel forgotten. Like, the Midwest is completely forgotten by the coast. And I grew up in the Midwest. And I know what it's like. And I think it's worse now. I don't think people care about farmers or the everyday worker. They care about the people that they believe, and they aren't even real people. They're the Instagram people how they appear out there. And that's something very different than what people actually are.
I feel like there's you look at Kamala Harris, and she's fourth in California in the primaries. And that to me says that there is a nationalization of politics. And that's sort of how it is in news and entertainment. It seems like everything's just homogenous. Like, there used to be regional differences to things, and you probably saw this as you traveled around the country. But now, I living in Indianapolis, just feel like everything's New York or L.A., whether it's my entertainment or my comedy or my news, or it's everything's programmed to Twitter, everything's programmed to the coast. And I totally get that same vibe where
flyover country.
Right.
Like, on those coasts, they won't do it out loud in front of people, but behind the scenes, they're like I have people that don't know the difference between Milwaukee and Minneapolis. I
mean, really?
Those are hugely different cities.
So that's not just like a right-wing smear against Hollywood. Like, that actually does exist in these bubbles.
Oh, yeah. I've seen people just literally call it, nobody cares, flyover country.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know if they're being... I've heard it said many times. I don't know. Sometimes it might be said in jest, but I think there's truth to what they're saying. They care about because there's so many people there, and they they do. I think there is a level of sophistication, quote unquote, but depending on how you turn, you know, how you define that on right. the East and West Coast, you know, the New York model culture and that type, and L.A. Hollywood. There, listen, people aren't doing, people coming from a more left viewpoint aren't doing it out of evil. They're doing it out of what they see as the best for people.
Right.
It's the same way people from the right are doing that. It's just, you're just looking at things in a totally different way. And mm-hmm. it's okay. You should have people looking at things. Now, whenever it comes into racism or stuff like that, I see things sometimes on the left that's like just as racist as it is on the right, because they go, well, this group of people can't take care of them. What? Right. They can't take care of themselves. Why are you saying that? That makes no sense. To me, like, people can. It just give the opportunity. The opportunity is the difficult thing to figure out how to make that happen, because people don't always have the opportunities. And I think that left side does want to give more opportunity, but what they don't realize is when you try to give that opportunity, it takes from something else.
Right.
And that's the difficult thing of trying to find that balance.
Do you think your sensitivity to a lot of this and to both sides, because you seem to be a fairly centrist person. I mean, I don't know that you, is it fair to say you don't have very strong political beliefs one way or the other? You just sort of, you seem like a noticer. You notice all these different trends.
I know I'm not going to change things. That's what but I'd rather see people try and get along. And I don't like the labels. I would put myself somewhere in the libertarian-ish world, mm-hmm. but also with the understanding that everybody isn't the same as me and doesn't think the same as me. So right. I have to be willing to acquiesce on my principles, because, and I still have this theory, and I think we might have talked about it over by at Alan Frank, was that, listen, when you're in a, and maybe we didn't talk about it while you were there, maybe it was after the fact, I'm not sure.
Have you been talking about me when I'm not around?
100%. It's so much better than when you're here. It's, when you live in the country, it's much easier to be libertarian.
Hmm.
It's much easier to have all your own rights because you don't bump into anybody else.
Right.
But when you live on top of each other,
yeah.
everybody's rights are constantly infringing on each other. That's why yeah. somebody in New York can't identify with somebody that lives in rural Wisconsin.
Mm.
They can't, because they mean, wait a second, I was talking to my neighbor, like this person, like I had to go 2 miles to get to my neighbor.
Right.
There's no, that's not the same life at all. And which I think in a way is more of an argument for the Republic, right? Because mm-hmm. the New York, especially New York City, their community standards and their community is totally different than the community standards in, let's say, Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
Right.
Because they can't, it's not the same thing. Prices aren't the same. You want to have, they keep talking about the universal income and stuff. So $1,000 in New York, good luck.
Right.
You can use a vending machine. $1,000 in Hoover, Alabama. You got an apartment
rolling. Yeah,
yeah. And some spending cash. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Like, because the communities are so different. And
right.
But the idea is that if you don't like it, and one, it's hard to do this. It's harder than I'm making it sound. But if you don't like it in New York, you can go to a place where you might like it more. That was the whole idea behind it. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was meant to be 50 different labs of democracy. I mean, originally 13 labs of democracy, where you had different characteristics, because they sat in a room writing the Constitution and the Declaration 11 years before, where they had very distinct characteristics between Massachusetts and New York and North Carolina and Georgia, and it's still that same way. And I think people in the middle of the country do feel like, all right, you want to get rid of the Electoral College now? Like, this is the last thing we've got to kind of hold on to things. You've already got media. You've already got most of the corporations. Like, we're all kind of, I think if you live more of a right life, if you more of a conservative lifestyle or believe in conservative things, there is, in this new media era, a sense of, hey, we are getting left behind, or at the very least, we're not being left alone. Like, it's...
Yeah, you're not being left alone.
Right.
What define the characteristics of a more conservative person for me?
I think that faith, I think, plays a lot in it. In it,
faith, is it your religion, a Christian religion, or is it?
Yeah,
does it have to be Christian?
I think if you are a person who is a Republican, who's a Christian, who like,
and it
you,
has to be Christian. It can't be another religion. Is that where?
No, no. I think like if you look at Ben Shapiro, for instance, who's an Orthodox Jewish person. You know, he lives a conservative lifestyle. No sex before marriage. He believes in traditional family roles. He believes in a lot of non-progressive things, but he's certainly, you know, not of the Christian faith. I think there are, there's a lot of people out there who...
Like, a lot of Indian families are, not Native American, but people from India. Very conservative.
A lot of black households, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of the values are Latino households, too, Mexican.
Right.
And like people don't realize that that's a lot of face... Listen, I'm not a religious person. I think I have my beliefs. I'm not sure of where I even fall mm-hmm. on a lot of it, and that's probably why, probably why I'm a little more left, I guess, in some ways, social. But although I never would, I think the problem is people now are so bold to tell people you're wrong, like you believe in a fairy tale mm-hmm. when they're talking about religion. I think that's the most unfair thing to say to
right.
a human being, because you don't know. I actually, and this is going to sound, this might sound crazy to you at first, but hear me out on it. I believe in the simulation thing.
Okay,
I'm all the way there there's no way. That if 20 years ago, I say Donald Trump's going to be the president, there's no way you say, yeah, I agree, 100% agree.
Right. Biff Tannen.
It's, yeah, it is, which is what that was based on.
Right.
Which so in terms of the simulation, thinking that we're all in a simulation, this is all because technology is advancing so quickly now
mm-hmm.
that they say in 20 years from now you won't be able to know what reality is from fantasy, and you could just step into something and you could have a completely different life,
like
that,
the deep fakes thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, but you could be in it, you could be in a video game and not even know that you're controlled by somebody else. Now people say, well, that takes that's to religion, and I'm like, no, because you don't know what's on the outside.
Right.
You don't know if that's all. We're all just living life. And listen, again, as crazy as it sounds, you have to go, geez, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Just like you don't know about religion. But again, it doesn't take away from religion whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
That religion could be there, and we're just living lives. Does that take away your free will? I don't know. I'm not sure. But I don't pretend to know. And
right.
And faith. But I would never tell somebody that their faith is wrong.
I think so. To define it,
and the other
it,
part about the other part right. about the simulation is, I think the programmers just got bored at this point. It's like
here, Bernie Sanders versus Trump.
Yeah, it's Fonzie jumping the shark. Literally, they're like, this is the most ridiculous thing. Let's see. It's but and have you ever heard the stories about people? I don't believe this stuff, but I shouldn't say I don't believe it. I'm highly skeptical. But you say people will see, they'll look out in the clouds and they'll see like pixelation all of a sudden. I'm like, come on.
Uh-huh.
I'm not that far into it, but I'm like, I just don't know. I'm not saying that I 100% believe that's what it is.
Right.
But I'm like, I'm not ruling it out.
Yeah. So I think there is, I'm for a liberal society where, and by that I mean anybody can do or believe or live out their life as they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
I personally want to live a conservative lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like if I see a family praying before they eat at a restaurant, I used to think that was weird. And now as I become more Christian, I don't think that's weird. And then I kind of go, well, why should I have why did I think that was weird? Like, let them be.
It was
let
just
them-
different than what you were used to. And
it's
it was
exactly
outside
right.
of your sphere of knowledge.
Right.
Which is a pretty good term, sphere of knowledge.
That's very good.
Yeah,
I may make that the name of this episode.
Yeah.
And I think...
Well, you're going to have to, because it's all I'm going to say. It's going to be like Smurf, sphere of knowledge.
And I totally see from, let's say, like a gay couple kissing in public 10 years ago, they said, hey, why is it weird that we kiss in public? Get over it. And I think we're like we have.
I would say I think it's weird when anybody kisses in public. To me, like I feel uncomfortable.
Well, get ready. That's how we end every show.
Yeah.
Small little kisses.
Yeah, but in little pecks,
just little ones.
Oh, that So, no, I was trying to figure out if I could take We Are Libertarians, W-A-L, and turn it into some other acronym of kissing, but I couldn't.
We are licentious.
But I'm personally, I'm not offended, and it's my own thing. I'm willing to say it's me being 100% the weirdo in that situation. I'm like, geez, why do people have to just, why are you kissing? Like, not man to man, like just anybody, male, female, right. Anybody, man, dog.
And I think that's the point, is that you're always going to be, any of us are always going to be uncomfortable with other people living out their lifestyle in public. And as the population grows, I mean, when you had a billion people on the, well, we've got 7 billion. I was, went out with the great Jason Doolittle, who actually
does a lot.
He really does. He's a great friend of the show, and he took me to dinner, and he's like, I just don't come to Dallas. There's 10 million people in this city, and you can't get anywhere. It's too much traffic. I go, is it like not enough interstates? He goes, no, they have enough interstates. There's just too many people.
Right.
And I think when, just like going back to the New York analogy that you mentioned a bit ago, it's like, we haven't gotten to a place in society where you just have to accept that other people are going to make choices different than you, and you just have to shrug.
Yeah.
What
right do you have to judge? That's the way I look at everything now. It's like, what right do I have to say that's right, wrong? It bothers me. Now, if it infringes upon what I'm doing, like, I go to a restaurant, and I don't like hearing people throwing F-words around at a restaurant where there are a bunch of kids, because you're not living in the situation. You're not adapting to your surroundings at all. And I have friends that do it all the time. I've seen like a kid out with his grandparent, you know, having a meal, and they got to hear my friend throwing F this, F that. I'm like, come on. Can't you see there's a kid there and a grandparent, and they're just trying to have a nice thing in public? And it's like, well, I want to do my thing in public. I'm like, but you don't have to do that. They're not going to do anything that's going to bother. You can, but do you need to? And I don't try to get an argument about it, but I'm like, that's exactly. You can, but do you need to? Can't you just care enough about somebody else? Because I hate going to places. Like, I was on a plane with a guy who's just throwing F words. You can see the people in front kind of me just kind of, you know, one seat up going, you know, he's saying things about broads and, you know, going, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I think we're lamenting is there, while we have gained that idea that you get to live your life in public as however you see fit, we've increased in that liberal idea, but we've decreased in the idea of just common respect.
Yeah.
And understanding that I may not want to. It's like I heard this from Dennis Prager, and I thought it's so great. Like, you wear deodorant and you brush your teeth because you don't want to subject other people to your bad breath and BO.
Mm-hmm.
Your mood should be the same way. If you're in a bad mood, you shouldn't take it out on other people, because that's just basic common decency. And I thought,
and it can happen, but you try to make it not happen.
And that is, and I just, that hit me like a lightning bolt. And I think there's just a lot of people where I was in a bad mood yesterday, and I was at the airport, and I hate being in airports. I hate flying. Like, and this woman just was really rude in the TSA line, and I wanted to yell at her. And now I'm not an aggressive yeller like my dad would have. I've tried to end that family legacy. And I think there's just a lot of people who are okay with, I have this impulse, so therefore it's going to come out of my mouth.
It's called Twitter. That's the problem. That's why I stopped doing Twitter. Mm. Like, I was on Twitter, and I realized I was saying things that I would tweet, like snarky tweets.
Yeah.
I started to say this stuff. I'm like, this is what everybody's doing.
Right.
And you can't do that. You have to be cordial.
You can't be rude.
That's one of
rate my Trump.
What do tremendous.
You,
on a scale of tremendous to tremendously tremendous, it's tremendous.
Sad. That's my favorite Trump, when he tweets sad with exclamation point.
Yeah. It's amazing how he'll do that. Like, he doesn't even talk like he tweets. Like, most people will tweet or write like they, but he has these weird things that are kind of like he was, but it's almost like he self-edited halfway through. Here, I'm going to fix this. This is grammatically incorrect.
Right.
And now, two periods.
I think he does that stuff because he knows, look at this idiot. And he knows he's going to get probably twice the amount of retweets when he does a misspelling.
Yeah.
He probably, I do subscribe to the 40 chess theory a little bit.
You think it's kind of like the Nigerian bank where they put misspellings in there just to get people to, you know, if you're not looking for the spelling and you don't know, you have a better chance.
Right. Really?
Yeah. I always thought it was for the editing because they didn't speak the language. It was coming. It's not. It's because the people who are answering that stuff, if they're not checking, you know, you've got a better chance of pulling them into the scam.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
I think there are so many people on Twitter, which is like a bad neighborhood, but we've somehow let it in the media become the neighborhood. We think that's reality, when in reality, it's just a bad neighborhood.
It's New York City.
Right.
It's New York City. You ever been in Times Square? Mm-hmm. When there's a lot of people there, everybody's mm-hmm. just bumping into each other, and everybody's like, hey, get out of my, you know, people are yelling at each other. That's exactly what it is. You're never going to see them again. You're bumping. People are walking different ways. It's just, that's tweets coming back and forth. People just yelling at each other. People get on it. And now you can add on to it.
Well, like this Greta Thunberg, and we're not going to get into a climate debate, but I'm watching this. She's the 16-year-old girl who spoke at the UN. She's very passionate about climate change. And
has Asperger's, I believe.
Yes. And when she speaks about climate change, she uses a lot of emotionally manipulative tactics that I think are a lot of the same tactics that Trump used. But Trump's an adult male who has figured this stuff out. She's a child still. I mean, I would still say a 16-year-old child, and you just kind of like listen to her and you go, this is just her parents pouring into her head bad thinking, scaring her to death, and it's coming out, and
I think if the child is autistic, mm-hmm. right, with Asperger's, listen, I don't think the child should be put in that position anywhere. I don't think a child, anybody under, like, I know this sounds contrary. It's why I say, listen, I'm not 100% anything, because I would say you can do it, but I wouldn't. You put this kid in a situation, this child, like, and no matter how noble the cause or her beliefs might be of trying to, it's not fixing anything. It's not, that's,
right.
All it's doing is, It's uniting the people that are the confirmation bias there, mm-hmm. but it's also then just taking the other side, going, you're using a kid
on both sides.
Yeah,
you're opening this child up for abuse. Which, if you're a parent choosing to, like, you know what's going to happen, you know the memes, the anti-Greta memes that you're going to see, and like, so I just made that point on Twitter, going like, I just don't think that anything's right about this, because it, like, from an empathetic, caring point of view, teach her how to not persuade in an emotionally manipulative way.
But maybe she can't. She might not even be able to do that.
And
we don't know.
And if she can or can't, why let your kid be a worldwide punching bag? On purpose. It just,
because fame, they don't care what kind of fame,
right?
It's just fame, because fame is money, and people would tell you, well, she's out there no matter what, she's taken one for the team. Because we don't care what these climate deniers think anyways, right. they're so far backwards in the science books that they don't even understand what's happening here.
Yeah.
We're not going to get those dummies anyway,
right?
What is the other side? I can see that, because I actually think it's a very rational thinking to say, I don't like putting a kid with Asperger's or autism in that spot, because I don't think any kid can handle that. I don't think most adults can handle it.
Right.
Most secure adults.
Mm-hmm.
What are the super activist climate change people, are they against it too, or were they?
No, they're for it, and they're bashing the right. So, you know, I just got.
Well, what's the right saying? The right saying.
So the right is basically saying, there are a lot of people saying what I said, which is what I just don't think this is healthy, And I was
And you're not bashing the kid.
I'm not bashing her at all. I'm bashing
not even the kids. It's not even the kids.
I'm saying her parents are doing her a disservice.
Right.
And man, you would have thought that I called her all kinds of names.
Really?
People never saw the nuance of what I was trying to say. And I just walked away going, why am I doing this? Why am I on this garbage website? If you can't say, you know, if you can't get most of America or the world to agree that child abuse is a problem.
Mental. You know, it's
right.
But like, even if it was the best cause in the world that has some type of, you know, why would you put your kid in that position? I just think that's a tough one. I mean, I know why. Fame. People think
her,
fame.
Her parents are allegedly, I've heard, they're actors, both of them. So I don't.
Yeah,
I
and then you're. I mean, you're skewed, anyways. That's why I don't live in Los Angeles, because people, they're very well intentioned people to me are just lost in. In you know, changing what you look like,
right.
and maybe I'm wrong. I can, but it's just where I come from, and I'm not. Again, I'm not judging, but I just didn't want to be around it.
Yeah,
like if I had children who are whatever they want to do in life, I'm all for. If my kids are gay, if my kids are straight, if my kids are whatever, listen, I'm going to support my kids, but I'm always going to give them. You know, that love, but I'm also going to give them, like, say, hey, here's what you're facing in any, you know, any type of, why do we care? Who was it? It was talking about, was it, maybe that was Love It's Two. He got into some interesting, but it was somebody telling me, why do I know that Don Lemon is gay? And why do I know that Anderson Cooper's gay? It just doesn't,
right.
Like, I don't feel like that's, like, I should I know that a news anchor is straight too?
Right.
I don't. What's the difference? Why? I don't need to know. And it used to be when news was just news. Like, it used to be that if you did the news, you would never mention somebody else's news.
Right.
Now they just talk about each other's news. They have wars between the different perspectives and the different magnifying glasses people are looking through.
Yeah,
and I always do that same thing. I always say the same thing over and over. We can disagree on something, but we could be saying the same thing. I'm over here, and you're over there, and you say no. I'm over here, and you're over there.
Yeah.
You can even be saying the same thing, and people don't want to listen. But I don't know how. I just don't like putting kids in those positions, because as much as they might be doing good for your cause, they're also going to take a lot of stuff from people you deem to be bad people. But
yeah.
You know the people are, quote unquote, bad in your head, that what's going to happen, but you still put them out there.
That's why I think it's done. I think that's why they take kids, especially climate activists and gun control activists, take kids, put them out front, so when people oppose the ideas that they're speaking, then the let's say on gun control, you put out David Hogg, and then when David Hogg gives gun control lines, and then the right says, nuh-uh, then the left gets to go, they're abusing children. Look at these bad people. I think it's a tactic. It's a well-worn
it's
tactic.
It's basically entrapment.
And it's really a disgusting tactic, and both sides do it, but the left seems to do it more, especially on these two issues. I mean,
well, I
a lot of the same people who were bashing the Covington kids on Twitter are bashing the right for being mean to Greta. And you go, I can literally go back in your timeline from earlier this year when you were saying, well, we should put those Covington kids to death. And that story was so far debunked. I mean, it just, so let's talk about how we solve it. I'm going to ask to solve the problem. I mean, when you go out and you travel around the country, you do stand-up comedy, you do corporate shows, you do appearances, you talk to a lot of people from a lot of different persuasions and perspectives. Like, what lessons have you kind of gleaned over the last, let's say, few years from just kind of being able to weave in and out of different groups and different identities and different, I mean, you literally take on other identities.
Don't eat the yellow snow. I don't even know. I just
do you think that's where your moderation comes from?
Talking to so many different people?
Yeah.
Yeah, because anytime you meet somebody who's different than you, you realize how human they are,
mm-hmm.
right? And you see the human. But I also believe that people don't come from you're never, in terms of nature versus nurture, you're always nurtured by whomever is around you.
Mm-hmm.
So some guy who sends out a racist tweet that lives in West Virginia when he's 15 and now is a Major League Baseball player, who raised him?
Right.
Because the people who raised him are the ones who are actually, this is the same as your Greta argument.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are speaking there. Because this person, whoever's been around him, hasn't had enough people that are diverse enough to understand, or I don't even think it's progressive. I just think it's more of being around people and understanding that we don't all come from the same set of circumstances. And if you have darker skin, the reality is that in this country, a lot of people are going to treat you different. It's not every person,
mm-hmm.
but you will have a little bit different of a life.
Yeah.
I remember a person telling me a story about there was a homeless guy who had passed out or died. He'd actually died. Mm. And he was on one side of the street, and a black person told another person about it. A white guy, he's like, "That person's dead over there." He's like, "Why didn't you tell the police?" He goes, "Because I'm black and I don't want to have there's going to be a set of judgments on me that they're going to ask me other questions."
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, maybe not 100%, but you have to worry about that, because there is plenty of that, and there are plenty of people who are bad people in whether it's law enforcement or just in everyday life. Now there's plenty of good people too, and you're not allowed. I don't think you can judge all people based on just the bad ones that are out there. I think that's the other issue. We get, it happens where somebody who's in one category does something, and people are like, "This whole category is filled with bad people." Well, every category's got some bad people in
right.
it. There's no category. Look, you'd say, "No, well, look at the priesthood." Exactly.
Right. I know some shit libertarian podcasters, Frank. Some real dildos. I haven't heard dildos in a while.
No, I just end scene.
Yeah, no, I think I keep coming back to that. I totally identify with the idea that I can't fix it. And I've become more and more aware of that over the last few years, because no matter how hard I try to be, to educate.
Well, when you came on with Alan Frank and you said, I just want to persuade, I'm like, don't persuade. Mm. Just tell where you are and let people make their own judgments, because I just don't think you're going to ever persuade people. Not you, but people in general. People are just so set. It's... the people who can be persuaded that simply. Now, I don't have a problem with throwing ideas out there for people to listen to. That's different than just trying to forcefully persuade, to just give a persuasive argument being formed. Just kind of, if you throw it out there and make good points, people go, "Yeah." But a lot of time people do this. "It's a good point, but I don't know. I just don't like it."
I don't know if it's because I'm 35 and I'm kind of blossoming into a middle-aged man. I'm 36 now.
Aged a year in this podcast.
I did. It's been rough. It seemed like, I don't know if maybe it's just because I was younger and in college and you're more open to discussing ideas, but it seems like people are more, like, they're more galvanized, they're more sure, everybody's making a public, they're making statements at each other now than they used to.
Again, the algorithms, people have confirmation bias. They're shown that they're right.
Like, and I'm asking you these questions.
I got 32 likes on that, man.
Right. Comedians, I think, have a special gift for kind of gleaming societal trends. And so I just wondered how much you think social media has kind of changed the interpersonal dialogue, because I think it's changed comedy. It's changed how we talk to each other. It's changed. Just
everybody's
like
worried about what's going to happen. They can have something snowball on you and destroy your career just on lack of context.
Right.
That's what's scary. And that so many people jump on a bandwagon because they see a blue check mark say something, and somebody like, you're going, "What? You didn't listen to the whole argument. You just cut out a little piece to come after me."
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Intent doesn't matter.
And intent's the whole thing. Tone and intent is all that matters. Mm-hmm. Like, what did you try to do in this situation? You tried to enlighten somebody to where you're coming from on something. I always just say, anything that I say is to me. This is how it appears to me.
Yeah.
Which you're allowed to say. When it appears to me, you can't say it should be for you. That's when I think it's wrong to say to somebody.
Yeah.
But it's to me, this is how I see it. And people are like, oh, yeah.
I've had several people kind of push back on the idea of persuasion in the last several months. As I have used the word persuasion,
it doesn't work.
Look, several people have just told me that's just a fool's errand, which it wasn't 5 years ago, but it seems like in
the Hollywood person tells you to be less conservative or less, you know, what to be more progressive. And does that work on you?
No, I think challenging. I'm a libertarian because I was a conservative, and then people argued back with me or mm-hmm. challenged my ideas, and I had no defense, and so that was a form of persuasion for me.
Yeah, but that's, I don't think that's persuasion, so to speak, as it is just conversation,
right?
And some of them might have been persuading at the time too, but I just don't think in this time. I think too many people have too much confirmation bias around them that there's no way that you get outside of their algorithm that they're going to be persuaded, because they have too much coming their way of people that already are telling them they're right all the time. It's hard. You hear 50 rights, you get one, I don't, you know, that's wrong.
Right. What are they? A personal attack. How dare you?
Yeah. I also believe that most people aren't offended by things.
I agree. I think that's a complete bullshit term.
I think they're annoyed.
Annoyed, or maybe they're genuinely outraged, but I don't think that I've ever had the emotion offended. I don't think that's an emotion.
I really don't know either. I've had a similar thought process to that, similar argument that I don't know really what offended is, because if somebody came up to me and did a short joke because I'm short, or a fat joke, because I'm fat. I'm not as fat as I was, but I'm still fat.
You used to be enormous.
Huge.
Wow.
Tremendously large. But in
obese.
Obese one Kenobi, my favorite Star Wars fatty. But you're annoyed by the short joke because you've heard it already. I've heard that joke. Same thing with any ethnicity or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody does something. There are a couple things. If the intent is to be, I do think there is offensive. I don't think most of what we say is offensive. But offensive is if somebody tries to hurt you. I don't think it's with words to your face. That could be offensive. I could see that. I could see taking offense. I take offense to that. I could see those words. But not a joke that's meant to be to be funny. It can be crude and poorly developed and bad, but I
you think about and maybe you've done some of this, you know, working the sports impression world. Like I think back to Jimmy Kimmel doing Carl Malone on The Man Show and putting on brown makeup and doing Carl Malone, you know, that impression, and you go, you know, he gets away with it because he's part of what Michael Malice calls the evangelical left. He buys in totally. The second he wavers on what, you know, cancel culture, who works at Huffington Post, these reporters, the blue check marks, as they're sometimes called, or SJWs, as soon as he were to deviate, let's say he weren't all in on socialized medicine, man, Media Matters would have Carl Malone blast up. Jimmy Kimmel needs to apologize for the, like, there's almost a becoming an industry and attacking comedians. That's why I think Dave Chappelle was in a unique position to kind of go after that concept and say, these are just jokes. Let people, I'm going to literally take, I knew he was going for the throat when in doing the trans jokes, he made the Asian face and joke and sounds that you're not supposed to make. Like, I remember Adam Carolla, like, I don't know if he got fired or got suspended for a couple weeks for making Asian jokes when he was the radio host in LA at that time. Like, they're like, that particular community is very, very organized when it comes to kind of knocking that down. And Chappelle knows all that. And like, he really seemed to go, no, these are jokes. I mean, as a comedian, I mean, how much does it, and an impressionist, how much does it play into your choices. I mean,
well, I want to do less impressions because it's, really? Everybody's putting you in boxes and saying what you can and can't do.
Yeah,
it's very difficult. You don't, you know, it's, I can't do certain people that don't look like me in makeup yeah. already. So that limits me in a sketch. I've already been limited to narrowing that down. I got a question for you that I haven't heard anybody ask. Women have been oppressed too, right?
Absolutely.
I'm almost turning to Norm Macdonald. Women have been.
What's with these broads?
Women didn't have a right to vote either.
All right.
But guys can dress up as women. That sounds like a Norm argument, doesn't it?
How about John Cleese? Yeah.
But I mean, there is. Think about how. Women couldn't own property, am I right?
Yeah.
Women couldn't vote. Women couldn't do a lot of things, but there's nothing, there's no, and that's some bad old white guy stuff. Mm-hmm. But women didn't have these rights because these old white guys, and who might not have been that old at the time, but I guess even at 30, you were probably old back.
Well, I will say there has been, at the place that I work at, there's been a quiet Me Too evolution certain ways. I think there are certain things that I talked to somebody, we're at the National Radio Association of Broadcasters radio show, and I talked to a salesperson that works at a station that has no affiliation with anybody I'm connected to. She's just a friend, and they have a morning show that is intentionally gross,
right?
Especially towards women, just sort of that old school guy talk. Like Howard Stern has even reformed his act. You know, he's now like trying to be the new Larry King instead of like stripper bingo.
Right. Do you two ever kiss? Do you kiss?
Right. Yeah. come on, kiss right now. Let me touch it. He's, you know, there has been in the talk radio industry that's geared towards comedy, more sensitivity towards women and less of that idea of like maybe our dads had kind of, you know, I just remember going out to the garage where all the men were hanging out at the family gatherings and being told, whatever you hear out here, you don't tell your mother, you know? And I just think that kind of talk has just gone out of fashion. And I personally am turned off by a lot of it.
I think it's in bro culture. I think it's there.
Yeah. I think it's
younger because they're, again, the counterculture mm-hmm. is more conservative because mainstream culture is way more liberal.
Yeah.
So I see it all the time. I see the kids and the kids who think they're quote unquote Democrats. You know, it's mm-hmm. so funny because my son even says, he goes, Dad, I think most kids are just what their parents are until a certain age.
Yeah.
They just say they are because they hear their parents say mm-hmm. they're that. And, you know, but I talk to my friends. He goes, most of my friends don't fit into that category at all.
Yeah.
Like he goes, my friend, I'll just make somebody up. Mikey, he says he's a big time Democrat, but he doesn't recycle. Like, well, that you can't, no, you can't be there. Right. And I've even had arguments with my wife who just thinks she's different parts of, you know, she doesn't think it through all the time. She thought she was a very big Democrat when I met her. Then she learned more about our taxes and me making money. Then she became a very strong Republican for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wanted something fixed. And she said, we need social programs for this.
Yeah.
The country needs social programs. I go, well, then you're not a Republican.
Right.
Like, you're probably right that there needs to be something there, or there could be something right there, but they'll waste money on something else, and that's the issue.
Right.
And that's what the issue comes down to, is I think a lot of people, I think even a lot of conservative people would be like, hey, I'm all for, it might go against my, what I believe in terms of government.
Yeah.
But I would be for it if it were efficient.
Yeah.
I would at least, if I knew the money was going somewhere, that, and there weren't going to be six different ways and just lots of different people being paid to do the same thing, not even in a different way. They just don't know the other people are actually doing it.
Yeah.
I would be for that. I would break my, where I am on my beliefs and just say, I acquiesce to this and get it. But the problem is, there are 25 different programs. None of them are actually doing anything. And there's just somebody getting rich on the end of it that doesn't really have the best in mind for people.
That has the best connections. I mean, that's...
And I have the best connections.
No, but
I had one with people in Russia.
Going back to your hologram scenario, they're just like, let's put a little Ukraine in there. Let's make up Ukraine.
I call them crannies.
The craniacs.
And a craniacs.
No, I think that is definitely... I've lost control of the conversation. We're very far out from where we so let's circle
That's
back.
That's how conversation works, though. Yeah. Conversation, I think, is you don't always have, I think we've talked about, I actually do think we've stayed in a lot of the same.
Tried to.
In the same world.
I tried to avoid what you normally said you talk about on podcasts, and we ended up right back there.
No, I don't know how much I talk about that on Alan Frank, but yeah. I don't talk about that outside of Alan Frank that much, which I think in terms of crossover in your podcast makes a lot of sense to talk that way.
Okay, good. I was worried this was not going well.
Well, it's not.
Oh.
But it's going better than I thought it would.
Okay. All right. That I've got that going for me. Serious question.
Jealous?
Your son comes to you and says, you said you will accept him. Dad, I want to start a libertarian podcast. Will you love him?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't want him to be out there doing a podcast at 15 years old, though.
Right.
Nothing political. I don't want to put him in the Greta spot. I would be like, why don't you do something about sports and just talk? You're not gonna get a big time job with your social justice sports takes or your conservative sports takes. You're not gonna be taken seriously, or you're not gonna get a big enough audience doing that. I don't think. Why don't you just talk sports, learn the games, care about what you care about? If a little of that seeps in of emotion or something. But I don't think you should be in there. I just don't see a 15-year-old boy talking politics. What does he know?
My cousin is 13 and started a political talk show. He's got all kinds of little cute Ben Shapiro things and, you know, liberal tears cups. And he goes, what should I do? I go, say nothing controversial, just report the news. The more you learn what the news says and learn, yeah. Would you say to your kids, stay out of politics? Like it's just so divisive.
Not if they want to be rich.
That's a good point. There just seems to be no upside. I'm living proof there's no upside to talking politics.
No, I think there's a core audience. I mean, it's just easier to talk left or talk right. I mean, and a lot of times I think some of the people that go and talk on the right are, they aren't even that far right.
Mm-hmm.
But they get so smashed just being even centrist or something, that or they go a little bit right, and then they're like, you know what, I'm getting killed. I'm just going to go all the way. I might as well go far right as I can. And that doesn't necessarily mean to me racist or anything like that. My difficulty in some, I would say, and I don't even know if it is conservative, even though you said, because I don't know, and I don't know, and I think I have some form of faith, but I know not everybody does, and I'm not going to tell people they're right or wrong, because, again, I don't know. I don't know who programmed the simulation. But I don't like this thing in culture where people are telling people you're 100% wrong or you're 100% right, even with climate change or anything like that. Like like somebody says it's a hoax to me, I go... I think there are personally quite a few elements that can be, you know, shown to be, I don't know if they can even be shown to be true, but they could over time. It's the nature of the scare tactics.
Yeah.
That stops me and turns me off to it, going, you told me 20 years ago it was over.
Right.
Now you're saying there's another 15 years. That means that your initial model was wrong. Can't we just try and take care of things and fix it? And people say, well, no, because the corporations. And I go, but the corporations, yes, you're right. They're some of them are greedy and all that stuff. But it all comes back to people in general anyways. Yeah. And we clean up here in the United States. The other countries that you think are so great, they're the one. They don't have any rules like this,
right? You're asking, let's tax the American taxpayer to death and let China go unfettered. It does seem like someone in your simulation control room accidentally dropped a jar of Spanish Inquisition, and we're dividing people like the, you know, between heretics and true believers, and that just this healthy. I think we thought that we were more evolved than tribalism, but I don't think we are. I think we still are the same tribal animal that we were 10,000 years
ago. Is that terrible? As long as you can, you be tribal and at least love thy neighbor. Can you be that?
I think that the problem, the best that I can guess, it is that when you introduce politics, when you live your life, I live my life, we're neighbors. But as soon as I come over to your house and I go, hey, we just passed a law, and the thing that you don't like, we're going to make you do, or else we're going to put you in jail.
Yeah.
Well, now I have to fight you. I don't care if you live your life the way you live your life, but the second you say, through government, we're going to force you to do the things that you don't want to do, well, then that...
And harder to enforce in the country than it is in the city, right?
The divisiveness is inherent to the system. It's a feature, not a bug, as is often said. And so I think we are asking, going back to the Republic example, we're asking the federal government to do too much and the state and local governments to do too little now. And, you know, the Byzantine Empire fell. It's called Byzantinism when you have too many rules, too many layers of regulation, too many rule. Like if you start a business right now in a city like New York City or Indianapolis or Dallas, the amount of people that you have to go through at the state level, federal level, local level to do, if you're a construction guy, and then you got union regulations, it's just too hard. And so people stop trying.
Right.
And so less jobs are created. So there's more dependency on the welfare state. I mean, my dad runs a janitorial company and has since 1978. And he literally cannot find anybody who will work for him.
Man.
And if he wants to employees, he has to hire people illegally, which he does not want to do. So he's willing to create jobs, but nobody's willing to do the jobs.
Because people think they're above those jobs. Because we've told everybody, right, you have to go to school to do this. That,
right,
just having an honest job and working with your hands.
Right.
And they take...
I mean, I did the math one time with my ex-wife. If we quit our jobs and went on all the social programs, we'd make an extra $50 a month.
Yeah.
At that point in 2009 or 10. And so you just go, what's the incentive to be a productive member of society when I can get the government to steal money from Frank Caliendo and give it to me?
Well, what was that when the country was formed? Because you're a historian. What was the what was the tax rate here? What were the social programs?
Zero. Have you heard of Whiskey Rebellion?
Yeah, but no, but I'm making a point here.
All right.
When the Statue of Liberty said, give it yourself, you're poor, you're tired, you're poor, that was when there wasn't a safety net for anybody, right, and you came here and people would die.
Right.
You took your chance, but money wasn't the bottom line. Now, most of the reason, I think there are racists too, but I think most of the reason that people... get upset about immigration and illegal immigration. And I live in Phoenix, where I know a lot of Mexican people who are angry about illegal immigration because, mm-hmm, they're like, I had to go through all this to be here, right, legally, and other people don't, and they can just be grandfathered in. That's weird, mm-hmm, to them. But I don't think people would care as much if money wasn't involved.
Right.
But it becomes part of... Because anybody who says that some group of people isn't hardworking, what are you talking about? People use that as an argument, too. They're like, oh, who's the hardest working group of people? Mexican people work very hard. Absolutely.
Sure.
You can't say that, and then they'll do that lazy joke versus they're the ones who work the hardest. It's like, you're missing the point. The point isn't about who's coming. It's not racism. The point is that these other people are making is, listen, there's taxes. There's a certain amount of money that's taxes, and then there's a certain amount of welfare. Welfare or I don't want it to make it sound like people are doing it because people have to get on their feet. And it takes time to get on their feet. People aren't doing it to be jerks. They're doing it to survive.
Right.
But when you make it easy to survive, too many people want to get here. Where are they leaving? The countries that you're saying are so good – that why would they ever want to leave them? It doesn't make sense when you break down the actual argument, but it, because of money. It makes sense of everybody. This was an experiment where everybody should have been allowed to come. Everybody said, like, a melting pot. Yeah. And it should be. But at the same time, you introduced money and people having to pay for each other at that point, which is like saying the government is saying you can't do this anymore. Your same argument works here.
Yeah,
that's the difficult thing. Is you talk to most people, they're like, I don't know, and we don't all know. We don't know how the economy works. It's way too big.
Why do you not want to live in California?
For me,
you don't want to pay those taxes. You don't want to. What time is it, by the way?
It's 4:01.
Okay, we'll wrap up then. I mean, most people are fleeing California to
968's the room, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 968. I'm in room 968, people. Most people are fleeing California because of the rules, because of the overburdening. Like, I just look at the progressive worldview at this point and I go, your model cities, San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York City, and nobody wants to live there. Why would I let you do that to the entire country? Like, no, we're not getting rid of the Electoral College. But anyways, let's start finishing up here. I want to know the name of all of your podcasts and your websites, and this is shameless self-promotion time, if you can muster the ability to talk about
I've got a skill. At Frank Caliendo across all forms of social media. You can go to frankpods.com to get all the podcast stuff. There's basically broken down into two now. Al and Frank Try to Be Serious, and then the Caliendo Cast. The Caliendo Cast is more of what I'm known for, sports and stuff, and then doing a little bit more of the nerding out thing.
Right.
A
lot of comic book listeners to this podcast. So, yeah.
Oh, are there really?
Well,
the nerding out, and I'll play the theme for you afterward, but that it's not out yet. But there are going to be different versions of Caliendo Cast, just because it's basically Frank-centric, which I met with some marketing people, and they're like, stop trying to do different segments and bring yourself into it. Talk about what you like and let the people know what you do like. So nerding out is all about how my daughter broke her elbow a year ago and got into the MCU, and then I started getting into more superhero stuff and then wanted to learn more to talk about her with that. And then Greg O'Connor, a guy who I know from Mad TV, who created a lot of the Mad TV music.
Oh, cool.
He wrote a theme song that's like a CW show.
Oh, cool.
It's unbelievable. It's like 5 years ago, my daughter Juliet broke her elbow in a freak trampoline accident, and now I am nerding out. Like, there's a whole story to it, and he wrote another thing. So, but this marketing group that I've been working with said, hey, here's what you need to do. This is what you're doing wrong. You're trying to put yourself in too many different spots instead of saying, hey, here's who I am. And I would never do this if I wasn't in entertainment.
Yeah.
But it's like, I've actually gone professional in this stuff because I've been doing it so backyard, football version,
right,
like the playground football, as opposed to trying to do it like in a professional sports way. So, and I look at people who have been on social media for a long time and they do things so sleekly. And I was just like, mine always looked like somebody just put it together for me who'd never been on social media before.
Right.
So at Frank Caliendo, if you can't spell Caliendo, it's the letter C, the word alien, and the word do. At Frank C. Alien Do, all forms of social media. Frankpods.com for Alan Frank, Try to Be Serious, and the Caliendo Cast.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on. Please go support my best friend, Frank.
Huge friends. Tremendous friends.
Yes. He's been very gracious with his time, both here and then having me on his show. So please go download their shows now. Thanks to everybody who's listening. And please join our Patreon. That's how we keep the lights on. I had to pay an enormous amount of money to have Frank come on
the
show.
Like 50 godzillion dollars. Godzilla.
Well, we are going to get room service and bill it to my boss.
Yes, we are.
He said, you have my permission. I go, Tom, I have been doing that for days. So, all right. Thanks for joining us here on We Are Libertarians, and we'll talk to you next week.